visibly and proudly. He hadn't even used his stele to take away the bruises on his face, along the line of his jaw, at his throat where the skin showed above the collar of his shirt. But he looked beautiful to her still, more than before, because now he seemed human, human and real. "You know," she said, "Aline said maybe you wouldn't be interested anymore, now that it isn't forbidden, now that you could be with me if you wanted to." She shivered a little in the flimsy dress, gripping her elbows with her hands. "Is that true? Are you not interested?"
"Interested? As if you were a book or a piece of news? No, I'm not interested. I'm..."
He broke off, groping for the word the way someone might grope for a light switch in the dark.
"Do you remember what I said to you before? About feeling like the fact that you were my sister was a sort of cosmic joke on me? On both of us?"
"I remember."
"I never believed it," he said. "I mean, I believed it in a way. I let it drive me to despair because I never felt it. Never felt you were my sister. Because I didn't feel about you the way you're supposed to feel about your sister. But that didn't mean I didn't feel like you were a part of me. I've always felt that."
Seeing her puzzled expression, he broke off with an impatient noise.
"I'm not saying this right. Clary, I hated every second that I thought you were my sister. I hated every moment that I thought what I felt for you meant there was something wrong with me.
But what?" Clary's heart was beating so hard it was making her feel more than a little dizzy.
"I could see the delight Valentine took in the way I felt about you, the way you felt about me. He used it as a weapon against us, and that made me hate him. More than anything else he'd ever done to me, that made me hate him, and it made me turn against him, and maybe that's what I needed to do. Because there were times I didn't know if I wanted to follow him or not. It was a hard choice, harder than I like to remember."
His voice sounded tight. "I asked you if I had a choice once," Clary reminded him. "And you said, we always have choices. You chose against Valentine. In the end, that was the choice you made. And it doesn't matter how hard it was to make, it matters what you did."
"I know," Jay said. "I'm just saying that I think I chose the way I did in part because of you. Since I've met you, everything I've done has been in part because of you. I can't untie myself from you, Clary. Not my heart, or my blood, or my mind, or any other part of me. And I don't want to."
"You don't?" she whispered. He took a step toward her. His gaze was fastened on her face, as if he couldn't look away.
"I always thought love made you stupid, made you weak, a bad shadow hunter. To love is to destroy. I believed that."
She bit her lip, but she couldn't look away from him either.
"I used to think being a good warrior meant not caring," he said. "About anything, myself especially. I took every risk I could. I flung myself in the path of demons. I think I gave Alec a complex about what kind of fighter he was just because he wanted to live."
Jay smiled unevenly. "And then I met you.
You were a mundane, weak, not a fighter, never trained. And then I saw how much you loved your mother, loved Simon, and how you'd walk into hell to save them. You did walk into that vampire hotel. Shadow hunters with a decade of experience wouldn't have tried that. Love didn't make you weak. It made you stronger than anyone I'd ever met. And I realized I was the one who was weak."
"No," she said. "You're not."
"Maybe not anymore."
He took another step, and now he was close enough to touch her.
"Valentine couldn't believe I'd killed Jonathan," he said. "Couldn't believe it because I was the weak one, and Jonathan was the one with more training. By all rights, he probably should have killed me. He nearly did. But I thought of you. I saw you there, clearly as if you were standing in front of me, watching me. And I knew I wanted to live. Wanted it more than I'd ever wanted anything, if only so that I could see your face one more time." She wished she could move, wished she could reach out and touch him, but she couldn't. Her arms felt frozen at her sides. His face was close to hers. So close that she could see her own reflection in the pupils of his eyes. "And now I'm looking at you," he said. "And you're asking me if I still want you, as if I could stop loving you. As if I would want to give up the thing that makes me stronger than anything else ever has. I never dared give much of myself to anyone before. Bits of myself to the Lightwoods, to Isabel and Alec. But it took years to do it. But Clary, since the first time I saw you, I have belonged to you completely. I still do, if you want me. For a split second longer, she stood motionless. Then somehow, she had caught at the front of his shirt and pulled him toward her. His arms went around her, lifting her almost out of her sandals, and then he was kissing her, or she was kissing him, she wasn't sure, and it didn't matter. The feel of his mouth on hers was electric. Her hands gripped his arms, pulling him hard against her. The feel of his heart pounding through his shirt made her dizzy with joy. No one else's heart beat like Jace's did, or ever could. He let her go at last, and she gasped. She'd forgotten to breathe. He cupped her face between his hands, tracing the curve of her cheekbones with his fingers. The light was back in his eyes, as bright as it had been by the lake, but now there was a wicked sparkle to it. "There," he said. "That wasn't so bad, was it, even though it wasn't forbidden?" "I've had worse," she said with a shaky laugh. "You know," he said, bending to brush his mouth across hers, "if it's the lack of forbidden you're worried about, you could still forbid me to do things." "What kind of things?" She felt him smile against her mouth. "Things like this." After some time, they came down the stairs and into the square, where a crowd had begun to gather in anticipation of the fireworks. Isabel and the others had found a table near the corner of the square and were crowded around it on benches and chairs. As they approached the group, Clary prepared to draw her hand out of Jace's, and then stopped herself. They could hold hands if they wanted to. There was nothing wrong with it. The thought almost took her breath away. "You're here!" Isabel danced up to them in delight, carrying a glass of fuchsia liquid, which she thrust at Clary. "Have some of this." Clary squinted at it. "Is it going to turn me into a rodent?" "Where is the trust? I think it's strawberry juice," Isabel said. "Anyway, it's yummy. Jace?" She offered him the glass. "I am a man," he told her, "and men do not consume pink beverages. Get thee gone, woman, and bring me something brown."
"Brown?"
Isabel made a face. "Brown is a manly color," said Jace, and yanked on a stray lock of Isabel's hair with his free hand. "In fact, look, Alec is wearing it." Alec looked mournfully down at his sweater. "It was black," he said, "but then it faded." "You could dress it up with a sequined headband," Magna suggested, offering his boyfriend something blue and sparkly.
"Just a thought."
"Resist the urge, Alec." Simon was sitting on the edge of a low wall with Maya beside him, though she appeared to be deep in conversation with Aline. "You'll look like Olivia Newton-John in Xanadu."
"There are worse things," Magnus observed.
Simon detached himself from the wall and came over to Clary and Jace. With his hands in the back pockets of his jeans, he regarded them thoughtfully for a long moment. At last he spoke. "You look happy," he said to Clary. He swiveled his gaze to Jace. "And a good thing for you that she does." Jace raised an eyebrow. "Is this a part where you tell me that if I hurt her, you'll kill me?"
"No," said Simon. "If you hurt Clary, she's quite capable of killing you herself, possibly with a variety of weapons."
Jace looked pleased by the thought.
"Look," said Simon, "I just wanted to say that it's okay if you dislike me. If you make Clary happy, I'm fine with you."
He stuck his hand out, and Jace took his own hand out of Clary's and shook Simon's, a bemused look on his face.
"I don't dislike you," he said. "In fact, because I actually do like you, I'm going to offer you some advice."
"Advice?" Simon looked wary. "I see that you are working this vampire angle with some success," Jay said, indicating Isabel and Maya with a nod of his head. "And kudos. Lots of girls love that sensitive, undead thing. But I'd drop that whole musician angle if I were you. Vampire rock stars are played out, and besides, you can't possibly be very good."
Simon sighed. "I don't suppose there's any chance you could reconsider the part where you didn't like me?"
"Enough, both of you," Clary said. "You can't be complete jerks to each other forever, you know."
"Technically," said Simon, "I can."
Jace made an inelegant noise. After a moment, Clary realized that he was trying not to laugh and only semi-succeeding. Simon grinned.
Got you.
Well, Clary said, this is a beautiful moment. She looked around for Isabel, who would probably be nearly as pleased as she was that Simon and Jace were getting along, albeit in their own peculiar way. Instead, she saw someone else. Standing at the very edge of the glamored forest, where shadow blended into light, was a slender woman in a green dress the color of leaves, her long scarlet hair bound back by a golden circlet. The Sealy Queen. She was looking directly at Clary, and as Clary met her gaze, she lifted up a slender hand and beckoned. Come. Whether it was her own desire or the strange compulsion of the fair folk, Clary wasn't sure, but with a murmured excuse she stepped away from the others and made her way to the edge of the forest, wending her way through riotous partygoers. She became aware as she drew close to the queen of a preponderance of fairies standing very near them in a circle around their lady. Even if she wanted to appear alone, the queen was not without her courtiers. The queen held up an imperious hand. There, she said, and no closer. Clary, a few steps from the queen, paused. My lady, she said, remembering the formal way that Jace had addressed the queen inside her court. Why do you call me to your side? I would have a favor from you, said the queen without preamble. And of course, I could promise a favor in return. A favor from me? Clary said wonderingly. But you don't even like me. The queen touched her lips thoughtfully with a single long white finger. The fair folk, unlike humans, do not concern themselves overmuch with liking. Love, perhaps, and hate, both are useful emotions, but liking. She shrugged elegantly. The council has not yet chosen which of our folk they would like to sit upon their seat, she said. I know that Lucian Greymark is like a father to you. He would listen to what you asked him. I would like you to ask him if they would choose my knight Meliorn for the task. Clary thought back to the Accords Hall, and Meliorn saying he did not want to fight in the battle unless the knight children fought as well. I don't think Luke likes him very much. And again, said the queen, you speak of liking. When I saw you before in the Sealy Court, Clary said, you called Jace and me brother and sister, but you knew we weren't really brother and sister, didn't you? The queen smiled. The same blood runs in your veins, she said. The blood of the angel. All those who bear the angel's blood are brother and sister under the skin. Clary shivered. You could have told us the truth, though, and you didn't. I told you the truth as I saw it. We all tell the truth as we see it, do we not? Did you ever stop to wonder what untruths might have been in the tale your mother told you that served her purpose in telling it? Do you truly think you know each and every secret of your past? Clary hesitated. Without knowing why, she suddenly heard Madame Dorothea's voice in her head. You will fall in love with the wrong person, the hedge witch had said to Jace. Clary had come to assume that Dorothea had only been referring to how much trouble Jace's affection for Clary would bring them both. But still, there were blanks she knew in her memory. Even now, things, events that had not come back to her. Secrets whose truths she'd never know. She had given them up for lost and unimportant, but perhaps... No. She felt her hands tighten at her sides. The queen's poison was a subtle one, but powerful. Was there anyone in the world who could truly say they knew every secret about themselves? And weren't some secrets better left alone? She shook her head. What you did in the court, she said. Perhaps you didn't lie, but you were unkind. She started to turn away. And I have had enough unkindness. Would you truly refuse a favor from the queen of the Sealy Court? The queen demanded. Not every mortal is granted such a chance. I don't need a favor from you, Clary said. I have everything I want. She turned her back on the queen and walked away. When she returned to the group she had left, she discovered that they had been joined by Robert and Mayris Lightwood, who were, she saw with surprise, shaking hands with Magnus Bain, who had put the sparkly headband away and was being the model of decorum. Mayris had her arm around Alec's shoulder. The rest of her friends were sitting in a group along the wall. Clary was about to move to join them when she felt a tap on her shoulder. Clary! It was her mother, smiling at her, and Luke stood beside her, his hands in hers. Jocelyn wasn't dressed up at all. She wore jeans and a loose shirt that at least wasn't stained with paint. You couldn't have told from the way Luke was looking at her, though, that she looked anything less than perfect. I'm glad we finally found you. Clary grinned at Luke. So you're not moving to Idris, I take it?
Nah, he said.
He looked as happy as she'd ever seen him.
The pizza here is terrible.
Jocelyn laughed and moved off to talk to Amatis, who was admiring a floating glass bubble filled with smoke that kept changing colors. Clary looked at Luke. Were you ever actually going to leave New York, or were you just saying that to get her to finally make a move?
Clary, said Luke, I am shocked that you would suggest such a thing.
He grinned then, abruptly sobered.
You're all right with it, aren't you? I know this means a big change in your life. I was going to see if you and your mother might want to move in with me, since your apartment's unlivable right now.
Clary snorted. A big change? My life has already changed totally several times. Luke glanced over toward Jace, who was watching them from his seat on the wall. Jace nodded at them, his mouth curling up at the corner in an amused smile.
I guess it has, Luke said.
Change is good, said Clary. Luke held his hand up. The Alliance rune had faded, as it had for everyone, but his skin still bore the white telltale trace of it, the scar that would never entirely disappear. He looked thoughtfully at the mark.
So it is.
Clary! Isabel called from the wall. Fireworks! Clary hit Luke lightly on the shoulder and went to join her friends. They were seated along the wall in a line. Jace, Isabel, Simon, Maya, and Aline. She stopped beside Jace. I don't see any fireworks, she said, mock scowling at Isabel.
Patience, Grasshopper, said Maya. Good things come to those who wait.
I always thought that was good things come to those who do the wave, said Simon. No wonder I've been so confused all my life.
Confused is a nice word for it, said Jace, but he was clearly only somewhat paying attention.
He reached out and pulled Clary toward him almost absently, as if it were a reflex. She leaned back against his shoulder, looking up at the sky. Nothing lit the heavens but the demon towers, glowing a soft silver white against the darkness.
Where did you go?
He asked, quietly enough that only she could hear the answer. The Seelie Queen wanted me to do her a favor, said Clary. And she wanted to do me a favor in return. She felt Jace tense. Relax. I told her no.
Not many people would turn down a favor from the Seelie Queen, said Jace.
I told her I didn't need a favor, said Clary. I told her I had everything I wanted. Jace laughed at that, softly, and slid his hand up her arm to her shoulder. His fingers played idly with the chain around her neck, and Clary glanced down at the glint of silver against her dress. She had worn the Morgenstern ring since Jace had left it for her, and sometimes she wondered why. Did she really want to be reminded of Valentine? And yet, at the same time, was it ever right to forget? You couldn't erase everything that caused you pain with its recollection. She didn't want to forget Max, or Madeline, or Hodge, or the Inquisitor, or even Sebastian. Every memory was valuable, even the bad ones. Valentine had wanted to forget that the world had to change, and Shadowhunters had to change with it. To forget that Downworlders had souls, and all souls mattered to the fabric of the world. He had wanted to think only of what made Shadowhunters different from Downworlders. But what had been his undoing had been the way in which they were all the same. Clary, Jace said, breaking her out of her reverie. He tightened his arms around her, and she raised her head. The crowd was cheering as the first of the rockets went up. Look. She looked as the fireworks exploded in a shower of sparks. Sparks that painted the clouds overhead as they fell, one by one, in streaking lines of golden fire, like angels falling from the sky.
The Mortal Instruments, Book 3, City of Glass, was written by Cassandra Clare and read by Natalie Moore. The recording engineers were Erica Weintraub and Travis Tun, with editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Michael Noble. City of Glass was produced and directed by Travis Tun. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.